basically had tried every possible avenue, contacting the local MP, and we hadn't given up. You don't want to give up in that situation, but we were really looking at which way do we turn next. And
I could hear the desperation in your voice. It was very clear.
It just seemed like a sheer fluke, really. I was driving home one day, heard your show and thought, hang on a minute. We were talking about cancer patients who are being refused treatment over the age of 60. And I was thinking, well, my sister is only 38 and needs life-saving treatment. And it seemed an injustice was being done. So I picked up the phone to have a little chat to you. And I'm so glad. The rest is history.
So glad you did, Angela. Well, look, explain to us a little bit. No, Pauline did in that phone call. It's a very rare condition you've got. Can you tell us a little bit about it and when you first realised you had it?
Basically, I was born with an arteriovenous malformation, and it's basically a growth of arteries that are embedded into your face. With mine, they were in my face, in my jawbone. And when I was 10 years of age, I literally came home from school one day, and I had a tooth bleed. And the tooth bleed just suddenly went into massive hemorrhage, and I was rushed to hospital. Over numerous months, where doctors didn't know what was happening to me. They kept stopping the hemorrhage, and it was a complete mystery.
We're not talking about, sort of, say, someone that could have a little nosebleed.
How
much blood were you losing?
You're talking, well, if you turned a tap on full, that's the amount of the blood that would
and
be
you're
coming
10 years
out of
old.
My mouth.
You must have, well, you and your family must have found that
it was
absolutely terrifying.
Yes, it was absolutely terrifying. And eventually I got sent to London and East Grinstead, where they basically discovered I had this really rare condition.
And you look, I mean, you look completely...
I do.
I'm going to say normal. That sounds like a wrong word. You know what I mean.
Because it's in the face.
Yes.
You wouldn't really know. As I say, I spent about a year in hospital. I had angiograms. They shut it all off. I had to have all my jawbone removed. Because it was embedded into the jawbone, and what happened was my tooth roots, when I hit 10, actually went straight into the jawbone through these arteries that I was born with that I shouldn't have had. So it was just a profuse bleeding. Yeah. So I had all my jawbone removed as a child. My teeth were removed, so I've got implants. And when they did this side, the right side started to go. So I've had it all built back.
You've been through the wars.
Oh yeah, for years.
How long ago did they decide that what you needed was this particular form of treatment, and why?
What happened was, after I had it when I was 10, it was always the unknown. The unknown. They didn't know if it would ever come back. You know, at the time I was told I was the fourth person in the world to have it, and I was the youngest. Nowadays, obviously, you know, there's more and more cases coming about. But as I say, I had it when I was 10. Oh, thank you.
Someone's just brought her a cup of tea. She's very nicely brought up, lady.
And over the years, I used to get monitored. I had to go and have yearly MRI scans just to check how everything was going. And eventually, as I got older, I started to get the pain back. You know, you have a pulsating pain. Your face sort of turns a bit bluish, and there's certain signs I felt it may be coming back, and I went back to East Grinstead, and they sort of monitored it and said it was like a sleeping volcano, but for years it was left alone until it's finally grown to such a stage now that I've got to have this life-saving operation, because it will just either have a massive hemorrhage or I could have a stroke.
But you've been having hemorrhages up to once a week?
I got to the stage I was having them 2-3 times a week.
And we're talking about, again, losing pints and pints of blood.
This little pinpricks on my face, which are the edge of the arteries. And basically, I would just suddenly have profuse bleeding. I'd be rushed into my local hospital, St Richard's, who I'd like to obviously thank all the staff there. They've been absolutely amazing with me.
But also, I mean, terrifying for you, terrifying for your sister, Pauline, but also for your young son, Callum, who's now 15.
Yes.
You're a single parent.
Yes,
and
I
your
am.
Son is with you when you are hemorrhaging.
Yes. He's seen me have some major hemorrhages, and it's not pleasant. You know, he's been in the right state.
I can only dread to think, you know, what that must be like.
And you know, he's always, you know, panicked. Mummy's dying. Mum's dying. And it's, you know, I've literally got to the stage. It was, do I write my will? You know, and I just can't believe I'm here today.
Well, this is what the doctors had said. I've seen all the paperwork, and the doctors saying quite clearly, this is a life-saving operation that you need. We'll go into the details of that in just a few moments' time. But you desperately needed this operation. The managers and paper pushers saying they couldn't fund the operation. You were in a bizarre situation where it was Birmingham who were saying, we can provide the operation and we can pay for half of it, but your own local primary care trust saying they wouldn't pay for it. Now, after I spoke to Pauline and we had a few emails and things, I got in touch with the local MP, Andrew Tyree, who you'd also spoken to, and we obviously spoke to him and asked him to put a call into the chief executive of the primary care trust. You know, important people talking to important people always seems to help a little bit. We also got in touch with the some national newspapers, as you've done, and one in particular made an interviewed you and made a few calls. Angela, what's the latest?
The latest is I'm having my operation next Tuesday. They've agreed to the funding, and I can't thank you all enough, because I think without the help of yourself, LBC, the newspapers, the MP, that amount of pressure, they've finally given in, and they are sending me to Birmingham, and I am going to get the treatment I need.
You're going to get it next week.
This time next week, I shall probably be in theatre.
That's extraordinary.
My operation.
The terrifying thing is, you could, as you say, you could have hemorrhaged and you could have lost your life at any time. And what I find extraordinary is, you showed me all this paperwork. I mean, just dozens and dozens of letters. You guys have done your admin. and you'd lost appeal after appeal, despite the medical experts saying, this operation is vital, it will save your life. And when LBC got involved and got some, you know, the MP to call the chief executive, miraculously, a change of heart was seen.
Yes, it was absolutely horrendous. I think it was 18 months ago. I was told if I didn't have this operation by August this year, I would be on, you know, I would die. And over the last few months, my bleeds have got worse and worse. I get tired. So slowly, my body is giving in. And to think, I've got this fine in 18 months. I'm actually having the op next week.
We are certainly.
It's been such a battle to think that my local PCT would not pay for this operation when, from my view, I was born with something, a rare condition. I've always, you know, paid my taxes, my national insurance, and if my local hospital, NHS, can't treat me, surely I should be sent to a hospital that can treat me.